That was a small part of Studies for a Portrait for Electric Guitar by Clemens Gartenstätte, played by Jaron Deutsch. The YouTube link to the video, to the whole piece, is given under this video, so if you would like to listen to the whole piece, you can find the link here under this video. Born in 1966, Clemens Gartenstätte studied in Vienna and then Stuttgart with Helmut Lachemann. He teaches music theory, music analysis, and composition at the University of Music in Graz. His works have been commissioned by the Donaueschingenfestival, Musik der Jahrhunderte Stuttgart, WDR or Witten Days for New Chamber Music, Wien Modern, OAF RSO or the Vienna Radio Symphony Orchestra, Musikbiennale Berlin, Salzburger Festspiele, Musikbiennale Salzburg, Steirische Herbst, Ultima Oslo, and more. I sat down with this fascinating composer to talk about his music and compositional philosophy. Clemens Gartenstätte, thank you for being here. According to you, your compositional style is a sort of resynthesis of perception, sensation, and feeling. What do you exactly mean by that?
My thesis, or I'm assuming, or I'm quite sure, that when we perceive, we project a single, let's say, perception, an acoustic perception, on all our senses in order to understand. So we need our full embodiment of our senses to understand a single perception. If we hear a sound, we project this sound into the altitude. So in our spatial relationship, we say it's high or it's low. Yeah, we also project it on our on various metaphors that we use. For example, gustatives, it's sharp, yeah, or a sound is spicy, or a sound is rough, so according to our skin perception. And we do this in order to understand any perception that we have. We also, I think, we do this with visual perceptions, but I'm concentrated on acoustic perceptions. We do this in order to understand this event that and to embody it to us, to make it to ours. Yeah? And what I do in composing, that I turn this way of looking at perception the other way around, so that I'm starting with my composition exactly at this moment where we project something onto. Yeah? So I find, for example, a sound which is sharp according to an instrument, or to it also the idiomatics of an instrument, etc., etc. Yeah? So all my work is based on this fundamental knowledge about perception. And of course, also perception is not something which is given to us like a biological, term that we simply have, but we learn it. So all what we also see, that our remembrance, that our bringing up, that the culture we live in, is also written into our body as a kind of grounding surface on which any perception of ours is possible. And also, and this is why I think we made art, by our art we can overcome and we can transcend these constraints and borders to somewhere else. Yeah, and that's just, you know, what I think, why we humans made art. Yeah, because that's the way how we can broaden our restrictions and see them as possibilities. Yeah, and with any artwork, maybe the possibilities of what we say art is a little, you know, the boundaries are a little widened then. So that's the fundamentals, maybe.
So would you say when you're composing, you're creating a certain acoustical experience for the audience? Or do you specifically reckon that I'm doing something, for example, spicy, and I assume that this will be perceived as something spicy for the audience? Or is it mostly from your own perspective?
I think it's both, you know. The first is that I'm not, because it's very easy to make a spicy sound. Yeah, it's just, that's not the problem. But thus, our perception is also based on relations and on specific, let's say, terms of relations. Yeah, we can see that there are some, for example, relations between spicy and rough, blah, 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 yeah, that are very normal. Yeah, so this is what we see in all the music history, in film music, etc., etc., that there are groundings and, let's say, cooking recipes of making a sound, yeah, which is very close to us. But if we work on the relations and also grounded on this kind of observation of our perception, we can also change the relations. Yeah? So it's not, I don't think that music, or especially my music, is there to make you perceive a spicy sound, because it's very easy that you can perceive a spicy sound. But if I'm working on contextualizations of where a spicy sound is maybe brought to let's say, I don't know, anyone, any other quality, then we might, by this synthesis, we might come to sounds and to relations that are not pre-described in our brain set, in our mindset, and in our body. And so we can produce relations, sounds, and also semantics, or in German Bedeutungen, yeah, so this kind of double meaning, that are new to us, that are maybe, I always call it, unlabeled. We don't know them still. Yeah, and this kind of working on a synthesis and producing, let's say, new is such a strange word, I don't like to use it, but let's call it or unknown. Yeah, acoustic perceptions. This is what I'm aiming for. So I would say the first thing that I'm try to work on a music that gives you a specific acoustic, musical, and then also entire body-based experience. This is what I'm trying to. Yeah. So this is the goal that I want to go. And all the, you know, the composition techniques, all the uses of instruments, or the working on the idiomatics of instruments, is then based upon this thought and about this kind of, let's say, try to get to an experience that I would say is a unique experience when it stays unlabeled, thus you can hear it many times. Yeah, a Beethoven sonata is somehow on because it's so complex in its perception, an unlabeled experience. We never get the whole thing. Yeah. Differently maybe to, let's say, a film music, huh? Which is directly and very clearly labeled, which is also a quality to be able to do something like this, yeah, to make such a labeling in the experience. Yeah? But this is not what I think contemporary art and contemporary, especially music, is made for.
So I'm curious, do you probably talk with the audience who have heard it, and you get feedbacks, and do people tell you that they have experienced this like new feeling, and this not knowing, not being able, when they hear your music?
Well, maybe sometimes not so directly. Sometimes I get the feedback that people, without knowing, let's say, the thematic path which a piece is going, but they suddenly react exactly in this way. Yeah, so they give me their body feelings, or let's say the acoustic transformation into their bodies, and it's absolutely more or less what I was working on, because I'm not intending to give you a feeling, but I'm working on feelings that and emotions, and also in German we have this wonderful word Empfindungen, which is very broad, yeah, which is more than a feeling, more than a sensation, and more than an emotion. It's a very complex thing. And I'm working on these Empfindungen, so sensations, yeah? And What someone then is telling me is his very reading of this working on. So I never heard that he loves those spicy or sweet sounds, yeah? But that there was this kind of very strange, you know, sometimes it's going to be recognized, and then of course the recognition is overlapped by something else. And so especially, and this is very funny, especially non-musician listeners, yeah, non-profs, yeah, who are somehow open to this kind of, you know, non-professional listening without all the techniques that professionals usually have, yeah, that they are much more, let's say, not open, but they, you know, also their language is more open, yeah, into a thinking like this, yeah. So, well, I get these kind of feedbacks quite often, yeah, also from professionals and also from very good musician friends, so that's for sure, yeah.
So what I'm getting is that you try to keep it abstract rather than tying it down to like a certain thing. You're trying to like broaden the interpretation as wide as possible.
Yes, I think you know this is a technical term. Trying to keep it abstract is because when we are talking about these sensations and sounds, we are talking about very very specific ones. Yeah. So if I'm going to a specific instrument and I would you know go for or you know as and I put in my bag of materials maybe something which might be close to something spicy or acid like, yeah, then it's a very specific sound because it's in the instrumental setting something that is somehow nothing abstract, yeah? But when I'm working, yeah, I try to keep it abstract because in the abstraction I can then, for example, make mixtures, make synthesias of sound, make, you know, also overlappings and transitions between sounds that are so far away, yeah, but which when I would be on the very tied down thing, yeah, I would not be able to think this, yeah. And these are also things that when you are working on this level, you are not able, or at least me, I'm not able to pre-hear this music. So when I'm composing, I'm not able to pre-hear the music that I will compose. I have something like, you know, a dark cloud or a very precisely defined cloud, something like in the metaphor above my head. Huh? But it's not a music. I'm not working on the music that I can pre-hear, so I'm not composing that I'm the music that I want to hear, but I'm composing the music that I'm not able to pre-hear, so I need to compose it. Yeah, very simple, you know. I'm pragmatic also in this way. If I would compose a music that I can pre-hear, I would be bored in a way because, okay, that's somehow it's existing, it's in my head existing. Yeah, but when I'm composing and there is no way to pre-hear this music before it's not written down, yeah? Then the act of composing really makes sense for me, yeah? And of course, this is also something, this kind of gesture into a space where I don't know where, what is, you know, there is a border, and when I start to work, there is something behind this border, yeah? I have no idea what, yeah? Of course, I have ideas what. Because, you know, I'm making a very clear outline of the techniques of whatsoever, you know. I assume that there will be something, but in fact, there is a lot of, in the process of writing, there are a lot of, let's say, unknown countries that I have to get to learn, yeah, I have to get used to. Sometimes, you know, even I have to learn to like these sounds or this kind of music that's coming out, yeah, that's not something that is clear that, oh, I love my music. No, I have to learn to love my music. In some pieces I still don't really love because they are strange for me, but somehow they were necessary, yeah. And this is something that I think is in this way of a music that is not producing an old picture or trying to reproduce an old picture of music, but is working on let's say, not foreseeable music, what music still can be, that's the effort that we composers can make. Yeah. Because I have, you know, a really good film music composer, he goes into this, I make this, and I make this, and I make this, and I make you cry here, and I make you laugh here, and etc., etc. Yeah. And this is, but this is not what I think the project of contemporary music is was invented for, and also the techniques are not worked out for something like this.
You mentioned that you don't pre-hear your composition when you're composing it, but would you say as soon as it comes on the paper, you know what you expect from the sound color, or will you get surprised when you're like rehearsing it with the musicians?
Of course, what I meant with I can pre-hear it, I'm not, you know, somehow there is the story of Mozart that he has all the symphony in his head and he just has to write it down. Yeah. this is what I meant. Yeah. Of course, I hear everything as exactly as possible, you know, and I try to also to have a very clear inner perception of all the sounds when I'm writing it down. Yeah. But when I'm making, when I'm composing, and when also by technical means things come together. Yeah. This is not pre-hearable for me, you know, in the process of music and also in the structure. Yeah. Of course, I'm then also working on something that we also have the German word Gestalt for this, yeah? And this is then, of course, very precise and also very pre-hearable. But what I then do to it, yeah? This is in the overall form and in the overall, you know, also gesture of the piece, not really pre-hearable. Of course, when I'm composing, of course, there is, you know, there are some indeterminances that might be not pre-hearable in any way, but I try my very, very best to pre-hear this. Yeah, I'm not. Of course, then there is this kind of wonderful surprise because your inner ear is always a little different to what you hear then from a violin or from an ensemble or an orchestra. Yeah. But in fact, this is not what I mean with so that I have no idea of what the score is. I have a quite precise, yeah. But you know, it's a more a constructive thing, yeah. That I'm not running after the music that I have in my head, but that the music is exactly discovering itself in the process of working, yeah. And I have a lot of steps in making sketches, yeah. And it's like maybe you know this old metaphor, like a photography that very slowly gets his precise shape, yeah. And at first you just see some. Like this, maybe you know some shadows like this. And the more and more I work on it, the more and more precise this. Music as a picture metaphor comes out, and at some point, oh, okay, this is the Gestalt, this is the face, this is the body of this music, you know, and it's not there before. I did not decide any of these small details, yeah, in this preciseness. Yeah? Of course, I know about the form, I know about a lot of things, and yeah, this is clear. Yeah, but this is what I meant with. Pre-hearing, yeah.
Well, discussing your compositional style, how did your style develop to this stage? How did you start, and what changes did you go through?
Yeah, at first, style is for me a term which I really try as hard as I can to avoid. Yeah, style is nothing that is interesting for me. Style is something if I have a style, or if I'm aiming, let's call it like this. If I'm aiming for a style, I'm aiming for a reproduction of myself. Yeah? And this is what I'm totally try to avoid. I try to make it any piece something which is a new land for me, at least. Yeah. Of course, something is totally clear. I cannot rip my skin off. Yeah. I cannot leave my body. That's just very simple. So there might be something which is then called style, some inscription in all the pieces, which I'm just doing because these are my hands, this is my body, this is my way of talking, this is my way of perceiving the world, etc., etc. But style, in the sense of the word, I would really try to neglect as hard as possible.
Well, let's say philosophy, like the philosophy that you've reached. Like, how did you develop that? Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it was it's a process, and when I remember myself, there were pieces done, let's say, in the beginning of the 90s of the last century, so about 1992, yeah, where questions arose in my music, which I could not really precisely answer or work on, but there were questions there. Yeah, there were the questions of the groundings of making sound, of the groundings of perception, also of remembrance, history. Yeah, and these pieces from the early and mid of the 90s were Steinbruch. What is Steinbruch? I don't get the word. You know, it's just these were the rough stones in the landscape. Yeah, but from this time on, of course, these were main interests, and this is more or less then developed to what I said before. Yeah, about my philosophy, and then simply, you know, working, and this was a big big thing for me, that I was able to work on project, not producing pieces, but I could really bring myself to making projects. Yeah, that every project developed a question towards what can music be under these certain circumstances. Yeah, and by asking myself these questions with any piece, you know, I have the feeling that I'm starting composing from the very beginning on, you know. There is no backpack that I have and I just put it and, there is a cup, I put the cup here and I can drink from the cup, but I have to find everything new. And I think that this gesture and this searching, yeah, is something that was there from the beginning on, yeah? Because that seemed to be for me just one of the big necessities of art, that when I'm making art, I should not know what art is. Yeah? If I have a definition of art, somehow I always felt it boring. I felt it, yeah. Felt it too satirized, too fat, to being fat in the fauteuil and turning on the TV. Yeah? And so still now I don't want to know what music is. Yeah? And this keeps me on going, composing, that keeps me on listening to music, that keeps me reading, watching films, going into museums, talking to people, because in fact, with any question, I have no idea what we are, what music is. Of course, you know, the experience gets bigger. Also, the what is fantastic in what I felt, for me, fantastic, you know, that my perception system, the antennae, you know, the big, they get very, very differentiated. Of course, also, I look at my world through my glasses, yeah? And it gets always harder and harder to put on different glasses on the world, you know. This is what I love in teaching, because then I see the different glasses that young composers have, yeah. And I can also change a little bit my glasses by, you know, getting into their world. And this is maybe something how it developed over the years, you know. And the thing that I feel is that by doing this, I will never stop composing, and I will never get bored. I will never produce music, but I will always be in a search for something that might be some, you know, that's on the very relation between me or us humans and the world, and that there is no restriction and there are no borders between this kind of world and us, because we are the world, you know. And this is a very, and it always keeps me going, huh? Because the questions never stop.
Understand. You mentioned teaching. What I was curious about was that you are probably on a jury which decides, like, if students get into the university. So when you see the score of a student, what do you have to see in that score, like from your view, to think, okay, this person has something interesting and I want to know more?
I don't know. It's, you know, that's one of the most problematic things in teaching, when you have to decide to work with somebody or not. Somehow it's, you know, of course, it depends on how old somebody is, but somehow I should get the feeling that the person who wants to compose is not, what is zufrieden? I'm just getting
failed or satisfied.
Satisfied, yeah. Neither with what he hears in music, neither with his music or her music, yeah. So, and that there is all this kind, always this kind of, I don't know where to go, but I need to go, yeah. And so I'm studying because I don't need nobody should tell me the path where to go, but maybe I get some, you know, some landmarks where I could go, or you know, I'm because this, and I think this kind of disorientation, yeah, is fantastic. It's you know, we all get frightened, of course, about this disorientation. And I know when I did study, and also afterwards, this kind of being overwhelmed by not knowing, yeah, and by having no clear idea was also frightening sometimes, but at least this is for me the huge creative aspect, when we have this kind of not knowing but need to go, you know, this kind of paradoxy, yeah. And that's where we make experiences. And if I get the feeling, and of course I can make mistakes as well, but that's human, when I get the feeling that somebody tries to force him to experiences that are always new to him, then I'm getting interested. Yeah, but don't tell me how this works in the score, because, you know, what we read in a score, you know, we are reading between the lines. Yeah? I'm talking to the young composers. Somehow you have to make a decision. Yeah? And somehow I had a bad feeling and it turned out to be fantastic. Sometimes I had a good feeling and it turned out to be okay. Yeah? Sometimes it's just that someone says, I want to study with you and nobody else. And I say, okay, let's try. Yeah, and it turned out fantastic. But still now I have to say, with all the students, I was totally happy. Yeah, everybody of them made his or her own way. Yeah. Not depending if they still compose or whatever, but got somehow complete, either artistic persons or let's say artists, or doing something else, but being then somehow with both feet in the world and doing just their thing, which is something, you know, it's a fantastic thing if you can help somebody a little bit in this kind of path through a life.
And how do you teach? How do you choose your material? Like, what do you give them for source of inspiration? Is this necessarily music or literature or other art forms?
No, it's not necessarily music. It's a reaction. You know, somebody comes with a piece or with a project, and then I'm just reacting with my system of thinking and, of course, also with my knowledge. And I think this is something, because I'm there as a kind of a... you know, they have to, their system is rubbing on my system. Yeah? And of course, I'm just there to ask questions and then, of course, maybe giving hints and do you know this, do you know that, blah, 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 and this. This happens there, and the technical aspects are like this, you know. This is clear. But somehow, I think teaching is something that you confront your system with a different system, yeah? And that by this kind of, how do you call it? It's this kind of a scratch, or then, yeah, there is energy might be free. Might be freed for, and also for me, and that's the wonderful aspect, but for the students, and of course also for me. So, and this is, and I'm teaching in a way of like reacting on the student's work in my way of thinking. Of course, I try to understand his or her way of thinking as good as possible, but then, of course, you know, my personality, my way of thinking is then also something which is then for them the
source of inspiration.
Yeah, not inspiration, but that's the wave breaker, you know. And when a wave comes and it breaks, then something, or maybe might be also ruined, but maybe some free energy and some new energy is arising. Yeah, and also I'm kind of a mirror, you know, because when I'm reacting on their work, I might be this kind of a mirror that shows them the picture of their work under my, let's say, conditions. Yeah. So I'm not a true mirror. I'm not the objective mirror, but I am the mirror in my way of thinking. Yeah. And that's also then makes sense to go to somebody else. Yeah. And trying out this mirror. Yeah. Like students also show the pieces to themselves, so to other students, and they also always function as kind of mirrors where you see yourself out of different angles. And that's, I think, very helpful and very necessary.
Okay. Thank you. And coming back a little bit to your compositions, I think it's interesting to discuss one of your pieces. Well, I had to go through your works a little bit and was absolutely fascinated by the studies for a portrait for electric guitar. Could you explain how you wrote it, and like how did you work with the musician?
Yeah. So the studies for electric guitar, I came to writing for guitar in the mid of the 1990s. Yeah. And still then, I never stopped writing for guitar. So there's a quite big complex of works with guitar and also for solo pieces. And for the studies for electric guitar, I was thinking. So my first thought was, there is a guitar player. He has two hands. And with the electric guitar, we also have the feet for the pedals, etc. And how to recreate this instrument in terms that every one of our hands and arms and also feet has an, let's say, polyphonic impact on the sound. And so the new definition of the guitar was very simple. The right hand does what always the right hand does. And that's also due to to the electricity. you do not need any plugging, because tapping is as good as plugging. Yeah, because so I can the hand moves over the fingerboard in very structures. We can also talk about then about the structures. The left hand, but then it's differently, you know, because on the left hand we have a bottleneck, which is a movable fret. Yeah. So there is no plugging or merely any plugging, but I use the bottleneck, and the bottleneck moves on the right hand side. And sometimes clicks also, yeah. And so the whole harmonic system of the fret in the left-hand side is then questioned by a glissando working of the bottleneck. Yeah. And so We have two different systems. Yeah, one is a floating on the right hand, and one is a precise chromatic one of the left hand, which are then synthesized into each other. Yeah, and the two feet. Yeah, we have always also. Let's say one which is more fixed and one which is more movable in working with the pedals. Yeah? And there are various pedals which are also then transforming, for example, in terms of pitch shifting, what the left and the right hand does. Yeah, so we have a very complex system of four... let's say systems which are then transforming each other, but in various ways. Yeah, so it's not always the same transformation and the same synthesis which is going for, which I'm aiming for. Yeah, and the material of the right hand, because it's an electric guitar, I'm very much concerned in this about all the harmonic system of pop, rock, and jazz. Guitar playing, so all what you play on the left hand is at is in one term built out of the chords which are coming out of the, you know, just simply possibilities of fingering of the guitar history. Yeah, so it's not abstract thinking on pitches, but it's fingering objects, yeah, that I'm getting out of this history, and then of course they are transformed by the bottleneck of the right hand side. The left-hand side, then by tapping, produces or brings the string to vibrate. And when the bottleneck is hitting the strings, it's also, of course, making it vibrate. So I have two versions of vibrations. Yeah, and it's all kind of tapping, stronger or what whatsoever. And in this kind of system, I am... starting a big game of, let's call it, and this is the portrait thing of possibilities of, let's call it, what I was talking before about human Empfindungen, sensations, yeah? And then I rely a little bit on some things that are interesting for me, because I need to... somehow to organize the material and also the thematic thread, yeah, and so and then the whole from the formal side, it's studies in plural, so because it was for a Darmstadt new music course for the electric guitar course, they Jaron Deutsch asked for small etudes for his students. And then I was I decided to write four etudes, four small etudes, yeah. And then I inserted three transitions from one etude to the other, and then that made the piece. So it's a kind of an etude book with some tradition transitions in between that then made this kind of the form of the piece.
Are you a guitar player yourself? Did you have the possibility to experiment on it yourself?
Well, when I was very young, I learned the guitar for myself. Yeah, but on a not very high level and not classic guitar. So I have a guitar, and I of course tried everything, or I tried most of the things out, but also a lot of things when I made my studies with also with Jaron and some other guitar players, just also to know also the electric part of this, you know, how does the guitar react, what kind of pedals are useful, and what is possible for this kind of it's not a guitar, but it's a six strings with a bottleneck and fingers and a fret and devices. Yeah, it's the word guitar is a little strange in this aspect then. And of course I tried this out, and then by composing there was also this kind of knowledge, this will be possible, yeah, but then by this kind of polyphonic layout that not just this piece but all my music more or less has, you know, there were many moments that also, again, I could not foresee and forehear, and that are also were also very, very hard to exactly know where, when the bottleneck is moving towards the fingerboard, and you have a scale in the left hand at the same time. What is the exact sound when at the same time the transition pedal does this or that? You know, that was somehow quite hard to. It was even sometimes harder than to organize an orchestra piece. Because you know what happens inside the instrument was quite hard, but it took a long time to write this and also to foresee this, and then I was absolutely somehow also overwhelmed that when they played it, and also then Jaron Deutsch played it for his recording, it was just like amazed, you know, how fantastic these sounds can be embodied in a musician's interpretation, and also within the sound of the instrument. Yeah. So it was, yeah. And it sounds like I tried to imagine it. Yeah. And sometimes, and this is very nice for me, sometimes even better than I was thinking, or more, how to say, more interesting, more, even more strange sometimes. Yeah.
Yes, it's quite clear that the musician is very open and explorative, and you can clearly hear that. What I'm also curious about is that, did you have to invent a lot of your own notations for the things that you wanted?
Sometimes, yes. Of course, you know, especially for the guitar piece, there are some kinds of notations which are not totally invented by me, because you know still since the 70s we have a big notation experience in various things, so I'm combining different notations. In terms of notation, I try to be as uninventive as possible, so I'm trying to rely as much as is possible on notations which musicians are more and more familiar with. Yeah. So it makes no sense to make at least for me to invent a totally different new notation, because then for the musicians it's even harder to learn the piece, because they have to first learn the notation before they learn the piece. Yeah. So what all the you know the what Lachmann, Spalinger, and all these and also Hübler etc. tried to invent with their notation out of a specific system, I try to bring into my music, because I assume it's more or less known.
Well, I think it's also interesting for many fellow composers to know if you have to come up with a new notations. Is there a better way to do it? Like, do you have some rules for it, or
The big problem with notation is that a notation that you choose or that you rely on limits what you can organize, you know. So our five-line system is a limitation of what we are able to organize in sound. Yeah? And also the bars and also the rhythmic organization. Yeah? This is what we have to know, that notation is a limitation of our aesthetic possibilities. Yeah? And so if you choose a notation, you can organize a specific part of the qualities of the sound, which and then others you are not able to organize. Yeah. And so, I'm in this respect quite practical with notation, because I do not think in annotation, but I think in what do I want to organize, and then I will find an annotation. Yeah, and if you look at the scores, it's very often a mixture, a wild, somehow also quite wild mixture, but which is in the meantime totally normal. Yeah, of notation types. Yeah, of five line notation with pitches and normal rhythms. With additionals, with not really graphic, but as for the guitar piece, one stuff which just shows you where you are on the board of the guitar. Yeah. Then also notations which are quality notations. Sometimes I'm giving musicians hints by using words, adjectives. Yeah. So because when you fix a sound, and also maybe, you know, when you fix for example for a string instrument, the pressure and the velocity of the bow, yeah, it's still not clear what the sound is like, yeah. But if I add a word, it might give then the musician the clear the idea. Ah, that's a very fluid, vivid sound, yeah, like this, yeah. Or it's a compressed sound, yeah. Of course, musicians then forget these kind of words. Yeah, so I try to be simply as communicative as possible. Yeah, out of my brain. Yeah, what I often hear is that in the beginning of the work with musicians, they say, "Ah, you're writing so many things, and it's so hard to read." And with the process, they say, okay, but I need everything, or I need every of those informations to get to your way of sound. Yeah, if I wouldn't have this, it would be a different sound. And that's what I would say is the goal of notations, to be as precise as possible, not preciser, but also not, you need to give a very, very certain idea of the sound to a musician. Yeah. And this is what the notation should aim for.
And it's important to show that you know what you expect.
Musicians need to get the feeling that there is a very clear, that I know what I want to hear. Yeah. Even when we are experimenting, and even better like this or better like this, you know, but there is this clear picture. No, it's this sound, yeah? And of course, this sound always has an interpretation range, yeah? Which is, that's clear, yeah? But this is absolutely clear, because we are composing specific, let's say, sounds, taste of sounds, construction of sounds, and so we need to know, no, that's a wrong sound, yeah? And that's something that, and that's transported to the musicians via the notation.
Well, as a successful composer whose work is regularly performed by acclaimed ensembles and musicians, do you have any tips for struggling composers? Not necessarily musical tips, but maybe notes on establishing contacts with people, how to know which competitions or workshops are right for you?
Well, you know, at first... something which is one of the most beautiful things in this world is that there are people, young musicians, composers, who compose by knowing that it's just for them, because you don't get famous, you don't get rich, you will not be acclaimed by a lot of people. Yeah, that's fantastic. The second thing is we all are bound into our constraints of life, so we have simply to say to someone, earn money, etc., etc. And what composers, young composers, should know at some point is that how you make your living is directly of an impact into your aesthetics. So if I want to live from composing, to say very simply, I have to know that this is infecting my aesthetics. Just to say, if, for example, if you can make, and I'm very cruel now, if you can make, let's say, 2,000 or 3,000euros for a piece, yeah, and you need, let's say, 20,000 a year, then you know how many pieces you have to write. So it's 9 pieces a year. And so every 1.5 months you have to write a piece. And then I ask you, when do you have time to think about music, to experiment, to create something, to be uncertain, to throw a piece away, etc., etc. Yeah. If composers like, for example, Wolfgang Riem, they just write, 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 this is their aesthetics, then it's okay. Yeah? But for example, for me, it would have been absolutely it was totally clear for me that this is not my way of living, yeah, and that I do not want to write pieces in this way, yeah. So and this is something that somebody that we all have to know, yeah, that this is a direct impact, yeah. And then of course, you know, it's so hard, you know, if you want to make art, we are talking about art, and if you have a project, you should find as a composer a way to make your project, yeah. Of course, then there is a competition. Oh, great. Should I write now an orchestra piece for this competition? Because maybe if I'm getting awarded, maybe then I'm have better possibilities. This is so hard to say because everybody is different, you know. I never won I won maybe one competition or two competitions because my projects were not made for competitions. They were too big, too long, too strange instrumentations, too whatever, you know. I never went to Darmstadt because I made my own experiences with my fellow composers, with playing music, it was, and of course it was a different time in the 80s and 90s, yeah. I just would say, if we see music as art, we should define this art as, this is my thing, yeah? If there is an opportunity that I have, I would go for it, yeah? And even when I say, okay, I am totally interested in an orchestra piece and there is a competition for orchestra, maybe I'm writing an orchestra piece but I write it for myself and then I put it into the competition, yeah. This is one thing that's maybe possible. So no clear answer because everybody's different, but when you make art, please see it as art, yeah, as something that is very, very intimate for you. And then maybe one more thing is experience, you know, making experiences, not just musical experiences, artistic experiences, human experiences, never believe yourself, never believe somebody else, always ask one more question when you think that you don't have to ask any question, and even ask one more question and go further than you think you might be able to go. Yeah. Then the world gets as it's, so. Then I'm getting curious. Then I'm getting excited. Then I'm getting interested. So this is, you know, and yeah, and never be satisfied. But that's clear, I think, when you start to compose and you're satisfied, because you have to be unsatisfied by music, otherwise you wouldn't compose. Even by the greatest music of the world, you are unsatisfied by this, because otherwise you would not say, okay, I want to do something else. Yeah? But, yeah, maybe these are... And somehow don't believe yourself, but trust in yourself somehow, yeah. By not believing in yourself, all paradoxes, you know. And yeah, and something, love the paradox, because in arts you don't have to resolve a paradox, but you can leave the paradox open, yeah, because the paradox then always gives you an energy, yeah. You don't have to solve this paradox. And this is something also in terms of, let's say, business, yeah, where you can leave some paradoxes open.
Clemens, thank you very much. It was such an interesting conversation.
Thank you for the possibility, and best luck for your art and for the blog and for everything else.